Good day, and welcome to Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, and as always, it's really great that you have joined us. So much going on in Washington these days, and 2022 will be a really pivotal year for politics and democracy here in Michigan and across the entire country. We're going to hold our first elections under the new political maps that were created by our first independent redistricting commission. And public officials' actions and decisions over the next several months could set us on a course toward preserving American democracy or allowing it to unravel. We're going to start the show today with someone who has been thinking quite a bit about all of these things and who will be making a lot of important decisions himself for his own political future soon, as well as the decisions that he needs to make about the future of our state and nation. Fred Upton is a Republican from St. Joseph. He represents Michigan's 6th Congressional District, and it's great to have him back with us here on Detroit Today. Fred, welcome back to the show.
Oh, thanks, Stephen. It is always a pleasure to be with you.
Hope
things are good on your side of the state. We look at lake effect snow here.
I was going to say, what's the weather like over there? I know it can be really snowy.
Figuring that out as I head to Kalamazoo here. I know I-94 has got some issues, so school is closed, whatever. But that's winter. That's why I drive a Jeep.
There you go, right? You can get through anything.
And it's a stick, so I love it.
Okay, so as I said, there's a lot of change afoot in Washington and here in Michigan. And I think a great place to start talking about that change is the change in your district that will take place, presumably, once the new congressional maps are approved, finally approved, survive court challenge here in Michigan. You would, if you ran for re-election, you would live in the new 4th congressional district. So I guess the question is, are you planning to run in that new district?
Well, it's a very good question, but today is not the day to get an answer.
You're not going to answer it?
But we'll make it, it's, as you said, there is a court challenge. I don't know. I would imagine that we will hear relatively soon as to whether it has standing or not. I'm not a lawyer, but I know it was filed about a week ago. So we'll see what the judges say. There was a similar case down in Ohio, and the maps were thrown out.
Yes, they were.
Commission, and so it's they have a little different process than we do here, but they were thrown out. So we'll find out soon whether these maps hold. But, yeah, I would say that this, and you've been a student of this for a while, 10 years ago, we also lost a congressional seat.
Mm-hmm.
It was a different process. It was the state legislature, and under Republican governor, Republican House and Senate, state Senate, Republican Supreme Court, they came up with a 7-7 map that the Democrats didn't complain about. No mm-hmm. suit was filed. The system worked. This is, I'll call it an independent commission, but they really messed up the lines pretty bad, particularly over here. My home county, Berrien, which is a pretty big county relative to the state, is split for the first time since statehood. And you have a district now. So, I live in St. Joe, and much of St. Joe, the MSA, Metropolitan Statistical Area, is now in Wahlberg's district.
Mm-hmm.
Under the map.
The old 7.
Our big, allegedly they were supposed to look at communities of interest. Well, we have some real communities of interest over here, St. Joe Benton Harbor, St. Joe Stevensville, all contiguous communities. Stevensville now, Lakeshore Schools, pretty big. It's actually bigger than St. Joe City Schools, where I went. Lakeshore is now in Wahlberg's district, and so in that district goes from Lake Erie to Lake Michigan, 200 miles long, 25 or 30 miles wide,
mm-hmm.
About 2 miles south of where I live. My first job was at a restaurant. It's now in Wahlberg's district. It's really quite a bit, and it's now Berrien County, which has always been a third of the district. Is now 7% of the district. So A lot of changes. We'll see if it stands, and we'll make a decision one way or another in the, you know, coming days, I suppose.
But, so I do want to talk to you just a little more about the kind of things that are figuring into your personal calculus there. But I hear you to be saying that you think this commission made a hash of all of this. I wonder if you perhaps don't buy the logic that was used here, which was that if you removed overt political interest from the process, or at least deprioritized that, you would come up with a map that respected other factors more. And of course, one of the factors is communities of interest, but that actually was not as prioritized as it had been in the past either. But do I hear you to say that you think this map is not?
It's not the way I would have drawn it. And I, you know, the voters approved it. And of course, who's for gerrymandering? Not, you know, that term is a pretty negative word.
Sure.
But our district before was, in essence, a perfect square. It didn't look like a mosquito. When you laid it down on the map of Michigan, you had communities of interest that were connected lots of different ways and had been for many decades. And all of a sudden now, you know, whether you look at the congressional map for Berrien County or you look at the state rep map, I mean, it is quite a bit different and quite a bit different than what it had been before. And again, you know, 10 years ago when we also lost the congressional seat, I thought, you know, everyone thought since no suits were filed that it was relatively fair. Now suits are filed on this, and again, we'll see what the judges say, but I would expect a pretty quick reaction one way or another, or else it maybe even, as some other states have done, you know, keep this map for this cycle and then change it, go back to the drawing board, in essence, for 2 years down the road. We'll see. But I would expect that some, you know, if we're going to keep these timelines, filing, I think, is like the 18th of April or something like that, traditional August primary. If you're going to keep those dates and allow people to circulate petitions and district numbers and all of that, it's probably got to be some stamp of approval or disapproval literally within the next, 10 days or so, I would imagine. We'll see how quick they act.
So I'm looking at an analysis of these new congressional boundaries, and your old district was a district that favored former President Donald Trump by about 4.5 points. And the new district 4, which, as you point out, takes some communities essentially out of the old district. I mean, it shrinks in geographic area, but it's still at a +4 Trump advantage.
Well,
so a little less. So I guess my question to you is whether this is about politics, which don't seem to be changing a whole lot, or is it about the other parts of representation? In other words, are you worried about having to represent a different kind of area than you have?
It's dramatically different in terms of new people. So Berrien County, which again has normally been about a third, is now 7%. Ottawa County, where we had none, I had the Allegan part, Allegan County part of Holland, because it bleeds into Allegan County, is now almost a third of the district. So we didn't have Battle Creek at all. So in essence, there's about 250, and we lose whole counties, St. Joe County and Cass County, Three Rivers, Sturgis, Cassopolis. They're now in Wahlberg's district. And so there's about, 250,000 new people in the district that had been a perfect square before. And I would also note that, you know, 2 years ago, back in 2020, I won our district. A lot of money was spent against us. It's a competitive district, won with 50.2% back in 2018. Again, a competitive district. I won by 16 points. Now, I'll confess we had a little bit of a flawed Democratic candidate, but I won by 16 points, and only because I won by 16 points did Trump win our district at all. I've always outpaced the Republican nominee for president. Usually only the sheriff beats me. And I have good sheriffs over here. They do run under the party affiliation, but they're both Republican and Democratic sheriffs. But there's not been an election where I haven't run ahead of the nominee, whether it be a John McCain or a Mitt Romney, Ronald Reagan, a Bush, or a Trump.
So we will look forward then, I guess, to you making a decision.
Yep, we'll make one.
You've got a couple weeks, right?
Yeah. Got a few more than that, but we'll make a decision soon. But it's, you know, and we'll see again what the judges say. And, you know, I'm not quite sure how that process works. They just filed, and it's good to be home now for a week. We got a lot of activities and obviously go back for votes next week. We got a pretty busy agenda as well. As you know,
you
the continuing resolution expires the 18th, and I just counted up. We have, I think, four full legislative days between now and then, and don't know exactly how this thing is going to play out, but we got a lot of big issues impacting us. I'm working on the CHIPS bill that helps our auto industry and electronics and everything else. Senate passed it last summer, and it stalled in the House. And working with Debbie Dingell and others to try and we got a pathway to figure this thing out, but we're also big meetings on Cures 2.0. This is a follow-up to the 21st Century Cures bill that I led when I was chair of the Energy and Commerce Committee. I had a White House meeting last night as we try to get more resources to find the cures for diseases that impact every family.
Yeah. So I do want to talk policy now, and I think there's a number of things, of course, going on, both political and policy-minded, that put you in interesting situations. Let's start here. You received death threats recently after you voted for the bipartisan infrastructure bill. Talk about why you voted for it, and again, talk about the reaction that you get sometimes from, I guess, constituents. I don't know, maybe they aren't even people who live in your district, but people who get upset when, as a Republican, you support measures that are forwarded by Democrats.
Well, a couple of things. As you know, and we've talked about this before, there's a caucus called the Problem Solvers Caucus, 60 members, equally divided, Republicans and Democrats, a number of folks here from Michigan in it, Peter Meyer, Slotkin, Debbie Dingell, Haley Stevens, myself. But it's 60 members, and Governor of Maryland called us in to meet with him last April, the key leaders of the Problem Solvers Caucus and No Labels. So we had about two dozen or so Republicans and Democrats, House members, senators, Joe Manchin, Mitt Romney, number of governors, a number of outside economists. And we talked about what are our infrastructure needs and where do we go? We haven't passed a major infrastructure bill in, I don't know, 10 years. And we hammered out a bill, a proposal, traditional infrastructure needs included roads, ports, airports, broadband, energy security, and we had just gone through the problems in Texas with the cold weather that froze the pipelines there, and soon to be, hadn't happened yet, the Colonial Pipeline, the hack of the gas pipeline in the East Coast. And we came up with what issues should be included. And we also decided that unlike the COVID packages under either Trump or Biden, that we were not going to simply add to the debt or the deficit, but we were going to pay for it. We're going to find offsets, pay for it for any of the new spending. And that bill was the one that moved through the Senate and passed 69-30 last August. Now, just before passage, former President Trump came out against it. And in essence, he said, wait. Wait till I'm back. I'll get you a better deal. His proposal when he was president was $2 trillion, so almost twice as much as this one, had no pay-fors, and it didn't go anywhere, not a hearing, not a bill introduced, but that was his idea. But in essence, he said, wait till, I guess, what, 2025? Well, we can't wait. This was bipartisan. And it started at a Republican governor's house, Larry Hogan, in Annapolis. And it passed with even Lindsey Graham, Trump's favorite senator for sure, voting for it. So, but then it got tied up with the Build Back Better plan, the massive, you know, social spending bill, BBB is the acronym for it. And the progressives, the AOCs of the world and others said, we want these two bills attached because otherwise we won't get the BBB. And that debate went on for a couple of months. And finally, in November, we, the Problem Solvers Caucus, were the leaders in freeing it from this large, much larger package. And President Biden signed it into law, and the BBB has gone nowhere. Social spending that, frankly, would have probably never gone away. But that's a whole another different argument. But in the meantime, you know, you saw the news last week. We finally got the money now for the new lock up in the Sioux, the Pollock. Almost $500 million is going to come from the infrastructure bill. Mm-hmm. And we know the needs for infrastructure like broadband and highways. I mean, that's what Governor Whitmer ran on 4 years ago, fix the damn roads. We want them fixed. This is going to be more money for roads and highways. This is going to be more money, you know, for, you know, we all know about the issue of Flint with lead. Yeah, but a lot of communities have this, certainly in my district, Benton Harbor and other communities as well. These lead lines need to be replaced. Well, guess what? There's $15 billion in this bill for that, mm-hmm. and we're seeing the work proceed now. And at the end of the day, there were some that tried to make this a very partisan debate, but in fact, it started as a bipartisan bill, and it never really changed until former President Trump came out against it, saying, wait till I'm back. Well, a bunch of us thought, we can't wait. We got to get this thing done. It's jobs. It's infrastructure. China has spent more in the last 3 years on cement and infrastructure than we have in the last 100 years. Mm. How are we going to keep up with the rest of the world if we have these crumbling highways and infrastructure needs that nobody in this country wants to see happen?
Yeah. Yeah, and then the backlash. Yeah, the backlash. Yeah. The death threats. Yeah. I mean, one of the things that always strikes me is, so you mentioned AOC and other progressives in the House. Rashida Tlaib, of course, is
all. I think all the progressives voted against it. Right, but you're right. I did.
But they get death threats too, right? They get death threats.
They do.
and
they do. Actually, I had a funny conversation with one of the progressives. I had never talked to. Frankly, we just aren't in the same circles, and you know, not in the same building or the committees or whatever. And she had gotten some death threats, and good news is most of the death threats that I got were from people not only not in my district, but not in Michigan. There were some, but you know, most of them are, you know, someplace else. And CNN, we gave the CNN one of the, you know, we got a lot of them, but we gave CNN one of the voicemails from someone. I guess people don't know that there's such a thing as voter voicemail with caller ID, mm-hmm. but we gave him the tape. It sounded, I think even Debbie Dingell, Debbie came to me and she said, I think that's the same caller that I get. I think it was the guy that case from Pennsylvania or someplace, but he used the same words, you know, they used my initials quite a bit, but they, some of the same voicemail patterns, but it's, you know, seriously, it is an issue that's very, very unfortunate. I've got a school board member that lives on my street, and you know they're getting threats too. I mean, this is not the democracy that we know. Let's win ideas. Let's not resort to this stuff. But it's serious, and we've referred to some of the calls to law enforcement, and they've made a few visits, I know, and let's hope that the threats don't become real.
Okay, when we come back, we're going to continue this conversation with Congressman Fred Upton about some of the policy things that are going on in Washington. We are going to talk about the inquiry into the January 6th insurrection and how he has voted during all of that. We'll also talk about what's going on with Russia and President Biden's response. We want to hear from you on the phones as well. If you have questions for Congressman Fred Upton or about any of the issues that we're talking about, give us a call. 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phone. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter or to Facebook and put comments there. We'll try to work you into the conversation. We'll be right back with more Detroit Today. Today, I'm Stephen Henderson, and my guest is Fred Upton, a congressman from St. Joseph, who represents Michigan's 6th District in Washington. We're talking about all things Washington right now, a lot going on as we get ready for midterm elections later this year. If you want to join the conversation, have a question for the congressman, give us a call. 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. You can also go to social media and put comments there, and we'll work you into the conversation. So I also want to talk about the Protecting Our Democracy Act, which was meant to make sure that something like January 6th of last year, this insurrection attempt at the Capitol, doesn't happen again. I'd love for you to explain to me why you voted against that.
Well, as I recall, there weren't any hearings. They just moved it forward. I supported the, obviously I was there on January 6th. It was a scary day. I was not in the Capitol itself when they were counting the ballots, the electoral ballots. I was in my office, but I had been walked on the floor earlier that day before we went into session. And I watched the events from my balcony in the Rayburn Building, overlooking the mall, watching the crowd go down to the White House and then walk back. I saw the noise had literally right below my office was where all the state troopers and others that came in for reinforcements deployed. But I supported the commission. Actually, there were actually three different proposals. Speaker Pelosi came with one that was pretty partisan. I think it was 9-4 Democrats to Republicans. Was just her idea. Even the number of Democrats, particularly in the Problem Solvers Caucus, squawked about that not being exactly fair as a select committee and something that needed to be bipartisan. So she pulled back on that and allowed negotiations between the Republicans and Democrats. Kevin McCarthy, the Republican leader, offered John Katko, who was the top Republican on the Homeland Security Committee, to actually negotiate with the Democrats. And he came up with, I thought, a pretty fair proposal, equal number of Republicans and Democrats. It was going to finish by the end of the calendar year 2021. To issue a subpoena, you had to have at least one Republican and one Democrat to move forward on that. Equal number of staff. I mean, it was really set up, I think, similar to the Benghazi commission that was there before. And it was moving forward. And then Trump came out against it like the night before. And at the end of the day, we only had 35 Republicans vote for it. I was one of 35. I think Peter Meyer was one of them as well. Mm-hmm. Passed the House. And the Senate, with Trump's opposition, even though he said it, as you recall, he did everything totally appropriate. With his opposition, they didn't get the 60 votes to get it done. I guess it was going to be bipartisan, bicameral, both House and the Senate. Had a majority, but didn't get 60. So it failed then. And Pelosi then came back with a third version, which is what is operating today, not an equal number of Republicans and Democrats as originally proposed. I voted against that one, but it passed, so it is legitimate. It's only a House committee, and there are two Republicans that sit on that, Liz Cheney and Adam Kinzinger, and they're the ones that are proceeding. And so although they're expected to finish this year, the other one would have finished last year, and we'll see what they do and how they're moving. I only know from press accounts that they've interviewed some 300-some people. Mm-hmm. Some subpoenas have been issued. And, you know, we'll see how this all transpires. But
the legislation, the Protecting Our Democracy legislation, was aimed at specifically stopping some of the things that led to January 6th. What's the reason to oppose that?
Well, let's wait for the report to be concluded. Let's see what lessons they learn. You know, when we had a commission on 9/11, it was an independent commission that was led, and based on their recommendations, Congress acted to come up with a legislative proposal before the commission finishes. Might be a little short-sighted and may miss something. So let's take the time to do it right.
And that gets to a broader question that I always like asking you, which is how you fit in the modern Republican Party. I mean, there are so many elements of it that I know challenge your sensibilities of what's right and what's fair. I mean, the influence of Donald Trump over our politics, over people in your party, only seems to grow over time. I think it's a little surprising 2 years after he's been out of office that he still has this kind of influence. He could run in 2024, I mean, you would have a real challenge, I think, about whether you might support him for president. Talk about how you negotiate all of that and how you can sort of how you can still say you are a member of the Republican Party, given all of the things that they're doing that I know you don't really agree with.
Well, I'm going to take you back to a story. I got a good friend a good number of years ago who gave me a compass. And he said, Fred, I like your compass. Share this compass with some of your colleagues. I worked for a great president, Reagan, at the White House back in the 80s. And here was a Republican president working with a Democratic Congress. And he got things done. We had some tough times. We were coming out of inflation. We had the Cold War. We had, you know, economic morass. I mean, a lot of issues. And he was reelected, winning 49 states. I mean, states that Republicans, you know, can't get 10 feet with from a poll with, you know, California and New York. He won them all, except for Minnesota, where Walter Mondale was from. And that was my compass, a guy that had really good people around him, and he took good ideas, and he had a very good relationship, and he got things done, and the country, you know, thanked him for it. And, you know, he was shot, if you remember, mm-hmm. almost died. So I've had, you know, I've served under a number of presidents. I've known them all. They call me Fred. I call them Mr. President. But you know, I'm not afraid to disagree or agree, regardless of party, on a particular issue. And, you know, with Trump, I did not support him in 2016. I stayed in, as we said, in our own lane. He was the only candidate of the 17 that ran for a president that I had never met, didn't know, didn't have any experience with. And I was more of a Kasich, Rubio guy, because I'd worked with them both on, you know, for Kasich, he had served in the House, knew him a good number of years. He actually, I think, won my district, as it turned out. But I stayed in my own lane. We had our own election. And, of course, you know, we saw some surprising things at the end of the Trump campaign. But, you know, as he served, I supported his economic ideas. You know, the tax cut was huge.
But what do you make of this rise of, and I don't think there's another word for it, of fascist instinct inside
agree.
The Republican Party?
We condemned his language. It wasn't quite the right word when he went after four of my colleagues, telling them to go back to the place where they were born.
Right.
Again, not going to use the language on the air here, but it was pretty insulting. And you know, I voted against it. Paul Mitchell from Michigan spoke strongly against it as well. And, you know, the president called me and I said, look, this isn't going to go in any business. And I happened to talk to a couple of Fortune 500 companies and asked what would happen if some of their top executives did this. They'd be out looking for a different job. I'm a big sports fan. I got a relative that's a all-star pitcher, Cy Young Award winner. Mm-hmm. I went to baseball and I said, what would happen if something like that happened? And I was recalled that there was a player for, I think it was the Dodgers, who or another team, and he had some racial, very insensitive gestures. And guess what? He got suspended. He lost hundreds of thousands of dollars, I think, in terms of fines when he got suspended in a World Series game. I mean, that stuff shouldn't go, particularly in an era like today. So, you know, I didn't have a problem disagreeing with the president when I thought he was wrong, just like I didn't have a problem with Democratic presidents when they're right, particularly when the country needs to pull together. And it's just who I am. That's the background that I had. And
I completely understand, you know, the difficulty of balancing all this stuff, and especially when the party takes such a rightward turn as it has.
Yeah, and if they want a rubber stamp, they got the wrong guy in me.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, Fred Upton, it's always great to talk with you here. Make sure that we are the first people you tell about your decision.
Even you've been a friend a long time since I think we met first time at the auto show a lot of years ago. And, you know, that's certainly an important industry for all of us to pull together on. And, you know, it was John Dingell and me and a few others that really worked together to get the auto rescue plan done way back when and save the industry. And you can't imagine if we had lost all these jobs.
Yeah.
Never would have recovered.
The whole world would be a different place, and especially here in Michigan. Fred, always great to have you. Thanks for stopping by.
You bet.
Okay, when we come back, we are going to talk about what is happening with Russia and Ukraine with Wayne State University expert Aaron Radish. Also want to hear from you on the phones. What do you think about what's going on in Russia and Ukraine? Should that be of concern to the United States? And if so, what should we be doing about it? We'll be right back with more Detroit Today.